This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show for your Thursday. Matt, Brett here today. Sven Sundgaard will join us to talk weather here at 5:30. Make sure you're submitting, because there is a chance of snow. At last I heard, though, the weather forecast from yesterday, it was going to track north of us. Still, I mean, we should be having snow at this point.
Yeah, no kidding. When 55 degrees yesterday or whatever got up to, no, great. It was just crazy.
Brett, have you, today it was I'm, of course, working the hip back and this. I got exhausted because I did too much. And so I sat down and had to relax for a little bit. Have you watched much of this Hawkeye show that's on Disney?
I had trouble getting into it. I got through about partway of episode one, and I haven't really watched it since then.
It's good.
Oh, is it? Okay.
I would say, as a matter of fact, if I may say, I think you missed – it got really good towards the end of that first episode.
Well, clearly I didn't see that part then. Yeah, I'll have to go back and check it out.
For goodness sakes, man.
Yeah, I don't know. I wasn't into it, so I'm going to go do something
well,
else.
Well, I will say this. It's been interesting as they do the TV shows for the Marvel movies, because I did see Shang-Chi in the theaters. I'd not seen the Eternals yet. But I saw that, and of course, those big movies, they're kind of fun, but they really have actually done an insane amount of storytelling via these Disney shows, whether it's the Scarlet Witch, Vision of Scarlet Witch, Falcon and the Winter Soldier, the Loki show, which was fantastic. The Loki show was brilliant, and now they're doing the Hawkeye show, and I say the Hawkeye show. It's the Hawkeye show. It's
like a football program, but out of Iowa. It's not for the Hawkeye show.
It does. It's actually a really good story and involves the woman who's taking over as Hawkeye, Kate Bishop. I was just shocked at how good it is. And the episode I just watched, they did this really cool camera trick where it's a car chase scene where Jeremy Renner and what's her name plays Kate Bishop in that. It's Roger's girlfriend. Oh gosh,
I'm no help here. I don't know her name at all, unfortunately.
Oh gosh, someone will let him. You know, someone will say, "Hey, idiot." They're driving away from a scene, and they spin the camera around during the set, and it's a one continual shot, and it's about a minute along where they basically just kind of turn the camera, and it keeps going around and looking at the people that are following them. Then it looks at them as they try to escape. At one point, the camera actually comes out of the car and follows Kate as she's getting ready to fire off some arrows. Very, just amazingly done. As far as the cinematography, it's really good. Haley Stansfield. That's who it is.
Ah, here we go.
It's Stansfield. Haley, isn't that Aaron Rodgers' girlfriend?
Wait, really?
Isn't it? I thought it was.
Ugh.
I'm going to presume the is not for Haley, because she's actually
Aaron Rodgers.
I've seen Oscar the Grouch there. Yeah, he is a delight, but he's looking shaggier and shaggier. Have you noticed that?
I just feel like Aaron Rodgers in private life is kind of a jerk, so I don't know.
I would not, considering that's how he seems to be in public life, I'm not exactly going to be surprised by that. Anyway, but I believe that they're dating. And, well, she's fantastic as Kate Bishop in the show. And, yeah, it's really good. It's been a nice placeholder until the big movies come in. Of course, the Spider-Man movie comes on out a little bit later on this month.
Oh, you think Tobey Maguire's going to be in that movie?
Apparently everyone's in that movie.
Oh,
All the villains.
Well, villains, yeah. They've been hiding the Tobey Maguire reveal.
Well, and Andrew Garfield, too.
Yeah.
And so they allegedly were there. No, it's that looks fantastic. The Doctor Strange movie coming on out looks fantastic. It'll be nice once they get back into their kind of more established franchises in the movie theater. I think that, you know, it's, you know, because of the pandemic, Shang-Chi and the Eternals kind of were, I don't think they would have necessarily put two new ones together like this. But I, yeah. And now they got the Spider-Man one coming out. They got the Doctor Strange one coming on out. Looking forward to that. But I've enjoyed this. It really is remarkable. Jeremy Renner is actually a really good actor. And I think that under anyone else in that franchise, that would the Hawkeye character would be such a joke. And I mean, I just love that line from Age of Ultron, because remember, when I had the hip replacement surgery, I started watching them all in order. And I watched Age of Ultron, and he goes, "We're in a flying city. There's an army of robots after us, and I've got a bow and arrow. None of this makes sense." I thought that was just such a great line. But, I mean, it was like that's – I think he gets his character. I'm very enjoyable. It's hard with the streaming services, because if I say, oh, I'm watching this thing on streaming, and then a person's not on a streaming service, I don't want to make you feel like you're being left out. And that's kind of one of the problems. I mean, it used to be with broadcast TV. It's like, hey, did you catch Charlie's Angels last night? You know, you could talk about that. Or even when I started in radio, it's like, hey, did you catch ER last night? You know, you do that. Catch Friends last night? Nowadays, it's like, did you pay for the subscription to possibly see the show that's streaming on a network that has 5,000 freaking choices for you at any given time? I'm glad Giuseppe won Great British Bake Off. I will just say that. Netflix, Great British Bake Off, fantastic. I love that show. But yeah, I'm now hooked onto this. So I've got to watch this show. I've got to watch Doctor Who. My life is becoming chaos.
And Disney's only going to keep making more Marvel TV shows.
Just take my money, you horrible mouse. You rotten rat. Here, take more. Yeah. Just in case, here comes the Boba Fett TV series and the Obi-Wan Kenobi one. Yeah, sure. The Mandalorian season 2, sure. Or 3, season 3, I'll be there.
They could do like a Howard the Duck TV show and people would still...
Oh, God, they would. And it'd probably be good. And that's the sad part is that it probably... I understand the character a lot better now. All right. Oh, yeah. Now, I'm just astute. But, I mean, let's face it. Disney kind of did the whole thing where they set the paradigm for this. They've set the standard. You know, you do all these movies. You basically reel all these people in. And yeah, I mean, I'm actually pretty amazed that Shang-Chi right now is the number one movie of the year. It only has $220 million in a pandemic year, but it got $220 million in a pandemic year. I think the Spider-Man movie will annihilate it.
I think everything coming out Christmas. There's a lot of big stuff, but I would not have called that being the number one movie of the year so far.
I don't know the Matrix movie is going to do too well because that's going to be out on HBO Plus. You know,
that's a good point with so many of these. Yeah, who's the film company that HBO Plus is with? I forgot which one. But, yeah, I know that, yeah, like you said, they put a lot of them on their streaming service.
Yeah, that's on the day they are released in the theater. So I can stay at home and watch it. And it's – yeah. Well, we'll get to more on this here too because I want to exactly – you know, obviously there's a reason why people are not going to theaters. I don't necessarily want to shame you into doing that. And why, you know, streaming services and watching TV at home is a pretty good idea at this point. It's the Minnesota coronavirus update. Shall we do this? And the story that broke earlier today, a Minnesota resident became the first in the state to test positive for Omicron, the Omicron variant, and the coronavirus was fully he got the coronavirus, this variant. He was fully vaccinated and received his booster dose in early November. That's what they say about this. They don't know. And there is already rumors. I don't know how much we can trust the South African medical system, considering how many people were allowed to get on planes that were clearly sick from COVID. But there seems to have been some hints that the vaccines are not working nearly as well on Omicron. But also there are some rumors I'm seeing that it's not as stringent as the Delta or the other variants. So welcome to America. Welcome to the world. Primary vaccination was more than 6 months ago and the individual was boosted in early November. Health Commissioner Jan Malcolm said shortly after the state confirmed that a Hennepin County man developed mild symptoms on November 22nd, got tested 2 days later with his symptoms still since resolving. It's unclear if being vaccinated and boosted prevented the man from anything worse than mild symptoms, but Malcolm said it's pretty logical to think the vaccination helped to make symptoms milder here. The latest reports from South Africa, where Omicron was first discovered, state that while cases there were quickly rising, symptoms for reinfected or vaccinated patients so far appear to be very mild. We're delighted that the initial cases have been had vaccine breakthrough, have had mild illness, said Ayersman, Chris Ayersman from the Minnesota Department of Health. If we can prevent infection in the first place, great, but ultimately our goal with vaccination is to limit hospitalizations, prevent death. So far, limited data, that's what we've seen. According to the Minnesota Department of Health, the man attended an anime convention at Javits Center in New York from November 19th to the 21st. Have you ever been to the Javits Center? It's on Manhattan there, it's on the west side of Manhattan.
I have not, no.
It's only about a block off the water. It's okay, I have to ask the question. You're having an anime convention now. All right. According to the man who attended the anime convention, the Javits Center, November 19th to the 21st, because he was in New York and it was on flights to and from New York, extensive contact tracing has taken place. The man has been extremely cooperative. The man did not travel internationally, so it's highly likely that he contacted the variant while at the anime convention, where upwards of 50,000 people are believed to have attended, according to Ayersman. Once again, as Brett and I have said here now for a year and a half, with our current airline industry, it's impossible to keep this stuff. This stuff's everywhere. Let's just be honest. It's everywhere. It's now starting to test for it to see if they specifically have got it, but Omicron is everywhere. It really is. It just is. And if this guy didn't go anywhere overseas, he was in New York. And sure, I guess you could say that best case scenario, he just happened to walk past someone from South African flight in New York City. This is your best case scenario and contracted it from him. But that still means there's a guy from South Africa that was contagious, roaming the airport at whether that's LaGuardia or JFK in New York. So, yeah, I mean it's everywhere. And if you think about it, if there is an infected person, this is your best case scenario. If there was an infected person at the airport in New York, how many people that got on other flights to everywhere else in the frickin' country did he infect? Ta-da! Yep. There is one close contact where this individual has tested positive. There's an additional follow-up that's being done, said Ayersman, noting that the close contact, who also lives in Minnesota, tested positive via a rapid test, so it's unclear if it's the Omicron variant. Overall, the state has so far identified less than 10 positive tests in Minnesota, only one linked to Hennepin County man that could potentially be Omicron, and those results expected within a matter of days. The state is not releasing any additional demographic information about the man. Approximately 2,000 positive COVID-19 tests in Minnesota residents undergo genomic sequencing every week to help identify which variants are circulating. Omicron is not believed to have had any impact on the current surge Minnesota is experiencing. Rather, the current wave is nearly 100% the Delta variant. Minnesota, yeah, and if you're a Republican, you didn't care about the Delta variant, you're probably not going to care about Omicron, but The Minnesota surge at this point is Delta. We know that from our surveillances and sequencing, where it's virtually all Delta, said Malcolm. Health officials, including here in Minnesota, have stressed continued use of existing tools to help blunt whatever impact Omicron may have. Vaccinations, mask wearing, social distancing, staying home when even mildly ill, and practicing good hygiene. Let's just talk about your hygiene right now, shall we?
You know, if you get Omicron, at least you'll smell good while you get it.
Maybe the reason why people are avoiding you has nothing to do with coronavirus, but stench. You know, we just hate to say it, but scrub yourself. How about that? No, I mean, obviously, wash your hands.
Wouldn't bad hygiene be a way to kind of prevent the spread of Omicron? No one would want to go by you.
Yeah, it's one way to do it. Well, let's be honest. With the amount of people that have been spending most of their time in their houses, you know. Are you wearing pajamas? Yeah, whatever. Oh, never mind. Just saying. I usually don't see that here at the restaurant. Yeah, okay. Let's revisit this one more time with feeling. Get vaccinated. Wear a mask. socially distance, wash your hands, scrub the rest of yourself every once in a while. That's probably a good idea as well. And, you know, try to, you know, limit your amount of time going out. Today, I went grocery shopping, but I went grocery shopping early in the morning. Hardly anyone there, very rarely, and I was wearing a mask. Shocked at how many people are not wearing a mask. I don't know what you think is over or not, but you probably want to wear a mask. Especially there was an old guy was going around maskless, and I'm like, oh, man, you are rolling the dice. You are rolling the dice. But wash yourself, take care of yourself, clean yourself, mask yourself, vaccinate yourself, distance yourself. And yet, once again, we might get through this. The problem is, once again, I brought this up, though. The problem is that this stuff goes everywhere before we know what it is. And as long as there are people out there saying, I don't care, I want to get on my flight, I want to go to Mazatlan. All right, you're like, geez, all right, whatever. The reality is that I think that we are getting to the point where if we really want to stop this and prevent this from being a 10 to 15 year long journey through our coronavirus world, I think that what we need to do, we might have to have some stronger mandates. As much as Republicans will scream, no, I want to kill everybody. I mean, we're starting to get to that point because we have a lot to learn yet about Omicron. And one of the things that obviously, you know, you could say to yourself, well, so far it doesn't seem like that bad. Well, yeah, but it might be a variant that ends up having much worse long-term conditions. You don't know. But the reality is, you know, God willing, it isn't that bad. But the next variant won't be nearly as habitable. How about we say it like that? Gary is in Minneapolis. Gary, thanks for calling. Welcome on into the show.
Hi, Matt. Always nice to hear your voice.
Thanks,
Gary. I was going to say, you know, I was just thinking of the garbage that's going on, especially in this country. A third of the people make war on science. They don't take the vaccine. They don't want a mask. They don't want to do nothing with science that medical science says. And then when it comes to climate or global warming, there might be end times. Well, they're in a hurry to get the end times so they can be the chosen few to go upstairs. And, you know, the Dark Ages, it may remind me of the Dark Ages because the high priests and the wealthy in cahoots with them would burn witches at the stake, and all the masses didn't revolt upwards because they said, oh, they're protecting us from the witches. So we got these gullible people here, and they're doing a lot of damage to the whole society and the world. Thank you.
Thank you. And once again, we'll be on witch patrol all week long here. Watch out for the witches. 952-946-6205. Thank you very much, Raising One Brow. I'm going to get to something else you said a little bit later on in the show, but Raising One Brow on Twitter. Aaron Rodgers is dating Shailene Woodley. Ugh. It's like making out with the Jack Lynx jerky Sasquatch. He looks like a player, though. I mean, let's be honest. The Jack Lynx jerky Sasquatch, he looks like a player, doesn't he? He does, walking through the woods. Yeah, looks a little bit less. Maybe I got to tell you the truth. I think the Jack Lynx Sasquatch would probably be a little less disturbing than Aaron Rodgers at this point.
Yeah.
But don't worry, Joe Rogan's got your back, okay, dude? 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Do I have to apologize to Haley Stensfield? I probably do. Sorry, Haley. My bad. You're doing fantastic in Hawkeye. I love you. And we'll take a break. Come on back. More on the Minnesota coronavirus update when we do return. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. More on the Minnesota coronavirus update. On the day that the Minnesota Department of Health confirmed the first Minnesota infected with Omicron, the state's formal COVID-19 update shows 5,313 newly reported cases. Only one of those, by the way, Omicron. 72 newly reported deaths, including a person in their 20s from Steele County. Now, I'd heard that part of this number is still deaths that they're processing from the Thanksgiving weekend. So that's why it's higher. We'll have to see. I'm hoping it goes down here, because 72, holy God. The state's COVID-19 death toll right now is 9,554. Minnesota's test positivity rate on the seven-day rolling average through November 24th is 10.1%, which is down from 10.3% on November 23rd. We should mention that earlier this year, we were down to, I think, less than 1% test positivity rate. Thanks, Republicans. Thank you. No, seriously. Thank you. Anything over 10% puts Minnesota the high-risk threshold for community transmission of the coronavirus. As of November 29th, the state reported that 3,655,659 people have received at least one dose of the COVID-19 vaccine. 3,373,236 people have completed the vaccine series. Actually, I think those numbers are you know, excuse me, no, excuse me, that is right. 3,373,236 people have completed the series. The state has administered 1,139,911 third dose booster shots. Through December 1st, the number of people with COVID-19 hospitalized in Minnesota was 1,549. That is actually down from 1,562, which had been the number. That was reported on the 30th. Of those hospitalized, 345 people are in intensive care. That's down from 356. 1,204 in non-ICU care. That's down from 1,206 as well. So it's still quite a few people. As a matter of fact, if you look at the layout of the hospitals right now, first of all, let's go with staff pediatric ICU bed availability. There's zero available for – this is a pediatric ICU bed for a kid. Zero available in the Northeast Metro. Zero available in the central part of the state and the east central part of the state. Six available in the entire Twin Cities metro area and two available in Rochester. For staffed pediatric non-ICU beds available. So these are non-ICU. This is a pediatric bed for a kid. Zero available up in the Northwest Metro, or Northwest part of the state, rather, should I say, Northwest part of the state. Zero available in the West Central part of the state. Zero available in the Central and East Central part of the state. Zero available in the South Central part of the state. One available in the Southeastern part of the state. Five total available in the Twin Cities Metro. Three available up on the Iron Range and in the Northeastern part of the state. And four available in the Southeast. Just unbelievable. This is you have the ICU bed for adults. You've got two in the entire Twin Cities Metro. Two. Dear Lord. And once again, most of these people are people who refuse to get vaccinated, refuse to wear a mask, and they are absolutely decimating our healthcare system. God forbid. I mean, we've got two ICU beds available in the entire Twin Cities Metro area. Two. For adults, two, five for kids. God forbid we have a serious accident in town, or God forbid you have a heart attack, or God forbid you have a stroke. There are currently only 24 staffed adult ICU beds available in the entire state, down from 26 on November 3rd. Eight pediatric ICU beds available in the entire state, which is down from 13 available on November 30th. Pediatric non-ICU beds are also strained. 13 available statewide. Total number of cases in Minnesota, 921,249 is the current count. A third federal medical team will be coming to Minnesota to help support exhausted and overwhelmed hospital workers who continue to treat more than 1,500 COVID-19 patients. Governor Walz announced Thursday a team of 14 doctors, nurses, and hospital staff for the Department of Health and Human Services will help treat COVID-19 patients at M Health Fairview Southdale Hospital in Edina. The team will arrive on Friday and stay for at least 2 weeks. Two teams of 22 medical staff from the Department of Defense arrived about 2 weeks ago and are assisting at St. Cloud Hospital and Hennepin County Medical Center. Minnesota's frontline healthcare workers continue to tirelessly treat patients sick with COVID-19. I'm so grateful for their dedication. I want to thank the Biden administration for providing emergency staffing support to help get the great doctors and nurses at M Health at Fairview Southdale. So the last thing Minnesota hospitals need right now is more COVID-19 patients. The last thing any Minnesotan should want is to be hospitalized with this dire disease. Through December 1st, the number of people with COVID-19 hospitalized in Minnesota was 1,549. I actually had a friend share with me a post on Facebook where some Republican who clearly has not gone in one of the hospitals, is out there saying, I was just at this hospital and there was not a single patient. Seriously. Seriously. Still in this day and age. Like I said, they'll go to their grave just as long as they think they're still owning the libs. Maybe what we should do is just go around to their gravestones afterwards when they're dead and just saying, hey, but you still own the libs, huh? You're dead. You're dead. But you own the libs. You got them. You got them. Showed them who is boss. Sweet Lord. Sweet Lord. 952. I don't want you sick. I don't want you dead. And I don't want you bankrupt for the rest of your life. Get vaccinated, wear a damn mask. Grow up, will you? Just grow the freaking hell up, will you? 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Ooh, we got story update coming up in the next half hour. I got a few stories we got to address when we do return. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Okay, so we've heard Mark Meadows, the former chief of staff for Donald Trump, state that indeed Trump did have a positive coronavirus test 3 days before the debate he had with Joe Biden on the 29th of September, if I remember correctly. So it would say that would be the 26th of September. And now you're hearing that there are multiple people who basically were saying, okay, just ignore this, act like it didn't happen. And, you know, needless to say, a lot of people, especially back then when there was no vaccines, and that he should have taken a very, very different approach. And as a matter of fact, a lot of people point to the debate and say, it was kind of fishy that Trump showed up for the debate late because there was supposed to be mandatory coronavirus testing prior to the debate. But because he showed up late, they basically had to say, OK, well, you know, we'll trust you. Well, obviously, you couldn't trust them because he's just a horrible human being. And, you know, he more than likely was positive with coronavirus for multiple days. And we've talked about the fact that he met with Gold Star families. He met with veterans, all the staff of the White House, Air Force One, the media, all these people. But it's one thing that was mentioned was in there was a I do believe it was a 2-point. And Brett, correct me if I'm wrong. It was a 2-point stop in Minnesota in the days after the debate. On the 30th of November, he had the fundraiser out on Lake Minnetonka, if I remember correctly. And he then as well did that big rally up in Duluth at the airport up there, which was attended by my count, pretty much most of the major players within the Minnesota Republican Party.
I did confirm that is correct. Yeah, September 30th last year.
He had the September 30th. He was at the Duluth airport. And then I believe he did that fundraiser. And you and I talked about on the air, I believe, at that point, that I hope he doesn't – we were talking about Stan Hubbard, who's a very elderly man, but it supports a lot of Republican things. I hope he's not going there. I mean, it's too dangerous to go to something like that. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, Stan Hubbard did not go to this. And now I'm very grateful that, you know, he didn't, although I'd be interested to find out at the fundraiser how many of those people that he was sitting and whining and dining with. And now you hear reports that when he was at that fundraiser and he did his little, you know, his stump speech, he cut it in half and basically people said he looked really sick. So, but he did have that rally as well up in Duluth on the 30th of September. Now, I want to give credit to Raising One Brow up on Twitter who brought this out there and laid out the timeline, and this is an interesting thought process. Trump holds a rally in Duluth September 30th. It was attended by many people in the Minnesota GOP, and there was not any social distancing. There was not any mask wearing. Trump was being his usual all over them. You have let's see here. You have the Minnesota GOP holding about a month later an in-person party on November 5th. Now, a reminder that that was their victory party, that they had not lost the Senate. And so Paul Gazelka, who I believe was there in Duluth, along with other Republican senators from the state, they had to have a big old party out in Lake Elmo to celebrate the fact they held on. And apparently, from all accounts, there was not mask wearing. There was no social distancing. And we got a reminder, this was pre-vaccine, too. And then Jerry Rolfe, the senator, got sick. And he died a little more than a month and a half later. So the question is, and it'd be very hard to track this, but there is a very legitimate chance, it might not be the most obvious, but there's a legitimate chance that Donald Trump came sick to the state of Minnesota, sickened multiple members of the Republican Party. A month later, that same illness got passed on to Jerry Rolfe, and then Jerry Rolfe died. There's a chance. I'm not saying it's a huge chance, but there's a chance that Donald Trump could have killed Senator Jerry Rolfe. There's a chance. And once again, I'll be the first to admit that there's a lot of other people these people interact with on a daily basis. It'd be very hard to track that. But you can't necessarily discount it, can you? Can you necessarily, I want to ask you, can you definitively say, no, that could not have happened? Nope, you can't. You cannot definitively say that Donald Trump didn't come here knowingly sick, sicken a members of the GOP, who a few weeks later sickened Jerry Rolfe, who himself died. That you cannot definitively say that Donald Trump did not pass on the COVID virus that killed Jerry Rolfe. You cannot say that. And it's out there. That is amazing to me to think about that you could actually have that lineage. You could actually track that. And I mean, I think you probably could if they had samples from Jerry Rolfe's COVID. I bet you they have samples from Trump's COVID. I think that there are some things that they can sequence to see if it's the same strain. Needless to say, if I could make a point about this, can I just call out the media of this state for not making a much bigger deal of that? The fact that at the very least, it seems like the Senate Republicans had a party where they sickened one of their own staff members, didn't tell the Senate Democrats, by the way, that they were all sick, and likely killed one. Do you think for one second, if the Star Tribune had that story land in front of them, that they would have, only it was the Democrats, only it was Melissa Hortman having a big party for the House of Representatives because they were glad they held it on, did not have a mask, did not have social distancing, and someone in the Minnesota DFL had died of COVID that they very likely could have contracted at that party? Do you think the Star Tribune would have let that story go? Of course not. They would have run front page news on that one for a month. Who knew and when did they know it? They'd have multiple investigations into it. But you got to sell those papers out in those Republican wealthy areas, you know what I mean? So I still to this day cannot believe that that story did not get more traction. Wow. The thought that Donald Trump himself could be responsible for Jerry Rolfe getting, there is that possibility. The sick president came, met with all the Republicans. Holy God. Thanks, Raising One Bra. That's a food for thought there. 952-946-6205. Some other news stories we're following. Let's go back to Hastings, where once again we talked about on Monday the CNN story, which talked about how the Kelsey Waits, the current chair of the Hastings School Board, who lost her reelection, basically went on CNN to talk about how this conservative Facebook group outed her transgender 8-year-old child, young child, as a way to basically vilify her in the campaign. And yeah, they're all horrible people. And once again, it's a private Facebook group, which I think we should know all the names of all the people that did this, because they're not Christian, they're not good people, they're horrible human beings, and they're disgusting bastards. So I said it. There you go. I want to know who you are, you pieces of crap. I want to know every one of you. And all you people out there saying, well, I was on that page, but I never saw any of the hate. Stop lying. Apparently that page was permeated with it, from what I've heard. But I find it ironic now that all these people that are part of this private Facebook group don't want to be outed now after they went after an 8-year-old child in Hastings. Anyway, there's another angle to this. I'll get to that in a second. Wednesday night, people in Hastings are turning on their porch lights to show support for Hastings School Board Chair and their family. Chair Kelsey Waits did not win re-election. She recently told CNN she was a bit of relief because what unfolded this election cycle is causing her family to move. This sort of transphobia is absolutely horrific, said Hastings City Council member Jen Fox. Waits will hold her seat until the term expires next month, but recently opened up CNN what she said transpired during an attempt to a re-election, including members of a group called Concerned Parents of Hastings, that's the Facebook group, outing her transgender child on social media. In a statement, Waite says in a part, since these posts were made public, the fears that drove us to remain private have been confirmed. Our child has begun to be misgendered by other children. They are experiencing increased fear and anxiety. My husband's workplace has been impacted, and our family has been targeted with sustained harassment in a community we used to call home. Now, using a second grader as a political football is just unacceptable, and it's going to stop right here, right now in Hastings, says Tom Bullington. Bullington is a longtime friend of Waits and founder of the Hastings Progressive Group. Hello there. He's helping coordinate a rally on Saturday and intended to show the Waits family that the world, this situation is not what Hastings is about. There are some indications that some individuals running for school board and their supporters were involved in some of this activity. And some of the speech, says Bullington, not very many people knew it was this bad. Members of the LGBT community, business owners, politicians, and many more plan to attend the rally. The mayor of Hastings, Mary Fassbender, hopes the message is loud and clear. I have known Kelsey and her family since they moved here, and she's given so much to our community and our school district and the kids in the community, and it's non-deserving, says Mayor Fassbender. It's a small group that has affected our community, and we're going to show we are louder that to support the Waits family. Good for you. Good for you, Hastings. But let's get back to the villains of this story. And that would be the quote-unquote private Facebook group, the Concerned Parents of Hastings. Fox 9, where I'm reading this story from, tried to reach out to the Facebook group being blamed for this, and the newly elected school board members said to be part of it, and they have not heard back. Uh-oh! Bubble Kitty got run away! Oh, we don't want to talk about it now! Okay. So let's take one quick step back here, because there's something that we need to make sure we acknowledge. If these three school board members, these three newly elected school board members, who I believe were endorsed by this hate group on Facebook, I'll call you what you are, you little jackasses, hate group on Facebook. If these three were part of that Facebook group, they were part of a group that vilified an 8-year-old so they could win. An 8-year-old in the school district they want to represent. Oh, man. All three of those school board members, those new incoming school board members, have to explain, were you part of this Facebook group, and were you part of the harassment of an 8-year-old child that you want to be on the school board to help educate? Is that what you're trying to do? Did you guys actually take one of the students from your school district and throw them on a sacrificial pyre so you basically could have your victory? Is that what happened? Because if that's what happened, holy God, to think about that, to think about there are three members of that school board, if that's what happened, there are three members of that school board who basically tormented an 8-year-old child so they could win. And I'm just, and I understand, I'm not going to tell anyone what to do. I am not suggesting what anyone can do. But I tell you what, I would have a great amount of joy if every single school board meeting those three school board members were in attendance for, they were bombarded with calls of shame to them if we find out that they indeed were part of this Facebook group who attacked an 8-year-old student in the school district they want to be a school board member for. That I would, anytime there's a public open meeting of the Hastings School Board and those three clowns are there, that they basically get screamed down every time they open up their mouth. I'd enjoy that. I'm not telling anyone what to do. I'm not saying what anyone should do. But I wouldn't. I would sure enjoy that if those people were challenged every single day. Make their 4-year term on that school board miserable. Make them beg to not have to run again. God, I'd enjoy that. Not saying that's what should happen. I'm not, you know, the people of Hastings have to do their own thing. But that is, if you find out, think about that for a second. You find out that three incoming members of the school board were part of a hate group on Facebook that targeted an 8-year-old student in the school district? Sweet Lord. Shame on all of you. Shame on all of you. And like I said, I want all your names. You don't deserve to be able to hide, you little cockroaches. I want to make sure you guys regret the day you ever joined that group. You're pathetic. You're pathetic bigots and you're jackasses. That's my name. My name is Matt McNeil, and I endorse that message. 952-946-6205, 952-946. See, I'm not hiding. I'm not hiding behind a Facebook group. I'm not hiding. I'm not scared of people finding out who I am. Poor boo-boo kitty. Let's take a break. One more story to update you on. We got to go back out to Hilltop Township again. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Yeah, I want to make sure I say, if those three new school board members are part of that private group, dear Lord, think about that. People that actually were part of a group that attacked an 8-year-old serving on the school board where the 8-year-old went to school. Wow. You are horrible human beings. If it's true, 952. If it's true, Brett, you've heard me. We need a verification on that. If it's true. 952-946-6205. The board of Hillman Township says it's willing to resolve the long-running dispute over the gravel road outside of Mora, Minnesota, offering to build a driveway at no cost to the family whose road the township claims no longer exists. On Wednesday, the board's attorney said he's been authorized to negotiate a settlement with Renee and Andy Chrisman on the fight that's pitted the Chrismans against the board, as well as against neighbors who own the land the road the Chrismans' home runs through. But if the settlement can't be reached by January 7th, attorney Ronald Alsop warned the township will appeal the recent court decision ordering it to maintain the entire road all the way to the Chrisman home. The Chrismans don't appear to be in settling mood. In a statement, the family called the township offer a take-it-or-leave-it ultimatum, and the township cannot seem to accept the fact that the judge ruled against it. The township has a choice, the Chrisman says. It is choosing to fight its own residents rather than acquiesce to the Kennebec County District Court. The dispute is over Hornet Street, a half mile leading to the Chrisman home in rural Kennebec County, about 85 miles north of the Twin Cities. In 2017, the Chrismans moved into a long vacant property at the end of Hornet Street. For years, the township had maintained and plowed only the first quarter mile of the road, ignoring the final stretch to the Chrisman's home. The Chrisman's real estate agent knew the history of the non-maintenance, the board said. While the Chrismans asked the township that same year to take care of the road all the way to their home, township voters turned them down after the Chrismans spent more than $20,000 in loan money to repair the road. A dispute developed over the right-of-way with their neighbor, Danny Schmall, when the Chrismans sued the township to force it to maintain the road. The townships later proclaimed that the last quarter mile of Hornet Street no longer existed legally as a township road and had reverted to the ownership of Schmall and his mother. For the last 2 years, the battle has been waged in courtrooms and heated township meetings. At first, Kennebec County District Judge Stoney Hilgis ruled against the Chrismans. Then last month, he issued a new ruling in their favor, saying state law does not allow the township to maintain only part of a road. It's that decision that the township board concerned. The district court decision has significant and widespread adverse implications both locally and statewide, the township board said in a statement. The district court decision in this case completely undermines the purpose of the statute and the legislative intent to electors to determine road maintenance decisions after years of no maintenance. Well, no, it does sound like you guys had a contract. You just your argument was, we don't remember anyone out there servicing it. Well, you had a contract. If the township is forced to maintain Hornet Street, the board said it would cost $100,000 to rebuild the road to township standards, as well as forcing the township to spend money on long neglected roads. The Chrismans called that cost estimate ridiculous and absurd, saying the last stretch of road to their home is the same width and in the same condition as the first half, which the township regularly maintains. We have a road, an over 100-year-old road, said Renee Chrisman. Let's use that one. Last summer, the township extended the road that connects the different part of Chrisman's property and said the Chrismans could build a driveway at their own expense, thus gaining access to their house. Now the township said it has offered to pay for the driveway, which would be 600 to 800 feet long, as an alternative to the lengthy and costly appeal. The gist of the offer is that the Chrismans would be provided access to the property from the adjacent plat at no cost to them, and the township doesn't have to be to reconstruct a road to an extensive cost to the residents. I don't trust the Hillman Township to save themselves. And the fact that this family has actually spent money to maintain the road themselves, $20,000, and they've made it up to code, it sounds like, I don't get the idea of where they're coming up with this $100,000 additional cost. I think this is Hillman Township just not wanting to accept the fact that they lost in Kanabec County Court, and that they're basically trying to find some way where they can at least get a victory and a win to where they're not completely losing. I got to tell you right now, you might want to make sure you just fix the road there. Because, frankly, if you don't, I think the Minnesota Supreme Court is going to rule against you as well. Hour two of the show, that's coming up next. Broadcasting from the Rudy Luther Toyota Studios at AM 950 Radio, it's the Matt McNeil Show on your Thursday. Matt Brett, Sven Sundgaard, jumping in to talk weather here at the bottom of the hour, and a lot to get to. You know, they had that story in the news at the top of the hour about the Christmas trees. Oh, it's going to be hard to find a Christmas tree. Didn't they say the same thing about turkeys? There are turkeys everywhere. You know, there was a guy who, I think it was on the Saturday after Thanksgiving, so last Saturday, posted, he's like, you know, there's my friend's sister's brother's cousin, couldn't find a turkey. I'm like, first of all, how about all the people between you and that person that couldn't find the turkey and not one of you tried to say, hey, well, I found a turkey over here? Nice. Way to help out your buddy. There was tons of turkeys. I was at the store that's in my neighborhood. There was tons of them. Did you notice that there are any empty turkey cases?
No, not at all.
I think that sometimes the news just enjoys too much being the negative, Nelly, and just like, oh, you know, it's Christmas trees. Oh, Christmas is ruined because you can't find a Christmas tree. Really? I drove past a lot today that seemed to have tons.
I mean, some of these, it just seems like they're getting their news from memes on Facebook. Yeah,
it does.
I mean, when you have the lady saying, well, we drink, 13 things of milk every week, and now no one can find a Christmas tree. Come on.
Welcome to Meme News Nightly. First of all, picture of a girl watching a house burn.
You better be careful. Meme News Nightly has a ring to it. That could be a
meme
thing.
Meme News Nightly.
Coming to ABC or NBC.
Isn't that Hannity? I mean, is that Hannity? It's really...
That's not wrong.
It isn't. Oh, did Joe Biden, is he really a lizard man? We'll tell you later.
Just asking questions.
Had the pressure of what button to push? Sorry. I can say them and everyone knows what they are. It's a flying unicorn with rainbow. Never mind. 952-946-6205. So did you see Colbert's show Monday? Monday. It might have been Monday.
I did not know.
Things were going well for Zach Redman. On Tuesday, his New Hope, Minnesota popcorn shop, Redmond's Popcorn, was featured on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert the previous night. The Colbert team's creating a spiffy new ad for the nine-month-old store. So the store has been there for 9 months, okay? And I saw it, and they had over, who's the guy from Parks and Rec, the mustache guy.
Ron Swanson. Ron Swanson. I know his character's name. I don't know the actor's name. I forgot.
You know, we are usually a cocktail party of information right here.
Yeah.
But
that's going to bug me.
Well, look at her. You forgot he's married to the wonderful woman that played his wife on the show, his first wife, Tammy 1 or Tammy 2. I can't remember. Love that show. That show is so funny.
Oh, Nick Offerman.
Offerman. Yeah. I was about to say Oberman. I said, that's not right. Offerman. Offerman did the voiceover for this ad. It's brilliant. You have to go watch the Monday night edition of Colbert, and you see a great ad. And he's done this now for three different small businesses. They did their own ads for the businesses, and the businesses have been going great. The ad plays off Redmond's own language, comparing his flavors, including hot barbecue and banana pudding, to luxury cars. The segment, the following day, Redmond told Bring Me the News he had long lines snaking out of his small shop in Winnetka Avenue into the building's hallway. Customers scooped up his popcorn and online orders backed up. On Facebook, Redmond promised to quickly restock and thank people for coming by. The national TV spotlight had been kind to the former barber and new entrepreneur. And I was cheering. I'm cheering for this guy. I am. Then Wednesday morning, abruptly, Redmond had to close his popcorn shop indefinitely due to unforeseen circumstances, he wrote on Facebook. It just knocked the wind out of my sails, Redmond said. To Bring Me the News. I'm not mad about it, not upset. I'm just taking it for what it is. The cause was an abrupt county inspection. Now, once again, I want to make sure we understand this. Redmond had been open for business for 9 months, and all of a sudden they're featured on Colbert, and the Hennepin County inspection just shows up all of a sudden the next. Okay. The cause was an abrupt county inspection, which Redmond said determined the storefront was too small for its purpose, that he needs to use a commercial kitchen rather than making popcorn in his home with a cottage food license. So it sounds like he had a license to make, if I remember correctly, you can sell certain products you make in your home if you have that cottage food license, that you can make them in your home. Like some people make jellies and stuff like that, and they sell them at county fairs and at your local summer thing. So I think you can do that, but you have to have a cottage food license. They're saying, no, it's not big enough. And then what's this story about the storefront was too small for its purpose? Was it a storefront? I mean,
some of these inspectors sometimes, I've heard this before, where, you know, they get on a power trip and they just want to.
Oh, well, there's zero doubt. I mean, the fact that this guy was on TV on Monday and then on Wednesday they're showing up after 9 months after he'd been there.
Yeah.
And, hey, we need to do a snap inspection.
Just happens to be days after Colbert, yeah.
The calls to Hennepin County for more information have not been returned. Redmond called the news not an easy pill to swallow, considering he'd been running the shop since February with no issues and no violations. He was one of the few people that opened up a freaking business in the last year. Seriously, I want to say, okay. Hennepin County, I understand you got rules and stuff like that, but the guy was open this year. He's successful. And on the day after his what should have been the beginning of a crowning achievement, and maybe, I don't know, franchises across the metro area, maybe across the country, because of the help of one late night TV show, you guys storm in there and shut things down. That's weak, man. That's weak. And if he did have the license to make it at home and no one had a problem with it before, at the very least you could look at the guy and say, I'll tell you what, we'll give you a 90-day reprieve. In 90 days you have to have a because I can tell you right now, in 90 days he'd probably have enough sales to where he could easily afford a professional kitchen, you know, that you have to cook in. Terry Zila, as a matter of fact, remember when we got the pies for him on Thanksgiving, he has a professional kitchen up in New Hope he works out of. I mean, it's just a professional kitchen space. I have zero doubt about that. This just seems like you guys are going out of your way to find, you know, create a problem that just doesn't exist. Commercial kitchens, by the way, are in demand and expensive, and Redmond said there's no assurances even if he made all the changes required, the current shop space will be immune to other further code violations. He plans is to nip it in the bud altogether. Redmond said he will sell his popcorn online only for now while looking for a new, larger space he can move into sometime in the future. His goal to stay in New Hope. The city's mayor, Kathy Hemkin, has been in contact with Redmond, and the city said it connected him to local businesses networking group to help support his shop. The city of New Hope knows small businesses are an extremely important part of our community. Hemkin said in the statement, adding that they hope to see him operating in New Hope again soon. And let me give Hemkin credit here up in New Hope. Let me give her credit that the idea is, your storefront might not be as big and you might be cooking a lot of this at home and that was okay, but now you're doing too much. And she seems to be like, okay, let's give you a 90-day reprieve. You keep open, you keep the business going, and then hopefully in that 90 days, due to this Colbert bump, you basically will have enough money to where you can get into the kitchen. It sounds like, there are people that are, you're just going out of your way. Like I said, who at Hennepin County decided to do this? Who on this, hey, you see that store over there? It was on Colbert. Well, let's go down and see what we can find as far as violations. Redmond, who's begun selling his popcorn after losing his barbering job during the pandemic, is taking it in stride, approaching it just as the next problem to solve. It's something for me to learn a new business altogether. I made a mistake as far as getting a space that isn't big enough. It's a learning process, and I'm okay with that. Well, he's one of what? 20 people that tried to open up a business this year. Seriously. I mean, we probably count on all the digits on my body, the number of people that tried to open a business in 2021. And we've now shut them down because of what sounds like, storefront size, not big enough, which I'm okay. Or, the fact that he's now selling so much popcorn that he needs to have a commercial kitchen. Come on. Can't we have one little bit of good news before someone comes in there and can we? Can we just, please? It'd be nice. Maybe one. It was a good story. Guy didn't deserve that. 952-946-6205. How about this one? The Wright County, you would agree with me, Wright County, not exactly the most liberal county in the entire state. Would you agree with that?
Not at all. Not one of the most blue counties.
No. It's not up against Hennepin as far as, which one, Ramsey or Wright County. No, Wright County is definitely a very conservative part of the state, which makes this next story astounding. A Minnesota sheriff is publicly criticizing the Minneapolis Police Department and how its officers responded to protesters during the unrest following the murder of George Floyd. Wright County Sheriff Sean Derringer called out what he says is the lack of leadership at the Minneapolis Police Department in a passionate speech Wednesday morning during a public meeting for the Minnesota Board of Peace Officer Standards and Training. Derringer said the final straw came a few weeks ago when he watched the videos released in part to the Stallings case. And we talked about this with Jaleel Stallings, where they not only did they open fire on him unannounced, then they tried to prosecute him. But then all the other tapes that we saw, which just showed atrocious behavior after atrocious behavior by the Minneapolis police. He said the final straw came a few weeks ago when he watched the videos released as part of the Stallings criminal case that showed how police responded to the unrest, including officers who were seen celebrating and laughing after hitting someone with a rubber bullet. I am telling you, folks, that I was absolutely disgusted watching that, and I've defended that agency for the very last time, said Sheriff Derringer. He said during a virtual advisory council meeting for the Post Board, the citizen-led council was evaluating officer conduct and working on priorities for reform when the sheriff voiced his frustration over how the controversies at MPD are impacting the rest of their profession. I am so upset with the lack of leadership and those other agencies throughout the state that truly do an unbelievable job serving our communities, yet we are all cast in the same barrel of crap coming out of the Minnesota proper, or Minneapolis proper, he said. The videos that angered Sheriff Derringer started to trickle out this past summer during the criminal case against Stallings, who was accused of trying to kill police officers. The Army veteran, who has a permit to carry, said he fired an unmarked van in self-defense after being hit with what turned out to be rubber bullets. A jury acquitted him of all charges this summer. No, we've got the video, KSTP. This is a KSTP story. We have the video. He was fired upon from an unmarked vehicle unannounced by police. They hit him in the chest. He thought it was white supremacists. He pulled his gun and fired back, thinking he was being attacked. That's what happened. And that's why he was acquitted of all charges. A spokesman for the Minneapolis Police Department declined to respond to the criticizing, citing professional courtesy and out of respect for Sheriff Derringer's leadership position. Oh, please. Professional courtesy. I've got some videos from the Stallings case that you guys should watch. He's right. Derringer is right. There are a lot of police officers who are doing good work. I'll give you a great example. One of my daughters, when the whole thing last year was going down, and she says, you know, she comes to me and she goes, I hate cops. I said, wait, whoa, what are you talking about? And she goes, Minneapolis cops. I said, well, that's not all police. And I sat down with her and I explained to her that that is a very unique situation, what is going on there in Minneapolis. And that is Minneapolis itself. You don't hear the same problems in St. Paul. You don't hear the same problems in Edina or in Hopkins. You don't hear of the same problems in Bloomington. That is a Minneapolis problem. And the reality is the vast majority of police officers are absolutely outstanding individuals. The vast majority of police departments run themselves professionally and courteously. They do. And doesn't mean that there aren't the bad apples, and there are more than I think that we want to acknowledge. But it's, you know, you what you get is that for the most part, most police officers do a very difficult, tough job, whether that's a sheriff, a state patrol, or a local police jurisdiction. And the reality is that Minneapolis Police Department is doing far more damage. When you look at those Stallings tapes, which, by the way, in my mind, have been suppressed, and I do not know why those haven't been playing 24 hours, 7 days a week in this state about what those officers did to the citizens of Minneapolis. But they have been suppressed. I'm guessing there's been pressure pushed on by the police department to prevent these from going on out. But I want to remind people, they actually tried to prosecute a guy for the lies that they were telling that the video showed the truth of. Okay. I think that you have to be, it's one of those things where you have to have more of the police jurisdictions and police departments around the state just saying, Minneapolis, you need to clean yourself up because you're making, when you've got the Wright County Sheriff, not exactly the most liberal guy, he's calling you out because your behavior is giving every police officer in the state a bad name, a black eye. Well, then you basically better clean up your act. And right now, I don't see a lot of people working to clean up the act in the Minneapolis Police Department. I don't see a lot of people rushing to try to fix things right now. And my God, that Stallings case showed us how broken the Minneapolis Police Department is. Reminder, that was a few days after they murdered George Floyd in the middle of the street. A few days. Disgusting. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. Also, some other police news and one or two other stories to get to before Sven Sundgaard. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Julie is in Minneapolis. You wanted to chime in today. Welcome on in, Julie.
Hi, Matt. You know, I've lived in Minneapolis continuously since about 1981. I had a brief spree where I took a job out east. But I would say about 25 years ago, there was a lot of scandal about the way Minneapolis police were treating the female officers that we had. Mm-hmm. And then it quieted down, wow, for years and years. And I always wondered to myself, I wonder how that's going. Then I noticed in the Minneapolis paper, I'd say about a week to 10 days ago, there was an article about a female officer that had worked for the Minneapolis Police Department for approximately 7 years, and she was totally the victim on a constant level of harassment, comments, and it was all a part of a cover-up. She was supposed to keep her mouth shut. Well, she finally quit, and I'm sorry to say I don't have her name in front of me here, but, you know, obviously we need more police in Minneapolis, We need some more women, too. Women, as we well know, tend to have very good people skills because they don't rush in there like Mr. Macho. But I want transparency in the police department. I don't want cover-up. I want to know how female officers are treated. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to follow this.
Well,
and I feel very passionate about that.
Julie, have you read that article in the Rolling Stone that talked about the woman that was also left? It might be the same woman, but I think it's a different woman we're talking about, who left the was trying to become a Minneapolis police officer and left?
I'm not sure. This woman actually was in the police department for 7 years.
Go ahead. Julie, what I want you to do is go. Thank you very much. Go look at that Rolling Stone story. Because it also kind of exposes a lot of very negative thought processes in regards to what women were going through. Plus also, if I can be blunt, I mean the implication she put out there that there came kind of almost this initiation where you had to attack a black person on the street. At least that was the implication that was made. That they were trying to get her, oh, go out there and hit that person. I'll back you up. And it was kind of like one of those things where, that allegation, we kind of glossed over that one from the Rolling Stone article, too. Now, Minneapolis police, the city of Minneapolis said, we want to have a police department, the vague replacement was not really an option. They want to have a police department. But people don't want to have cops firing rubber bullets at innocent civilians and high-fiving each other when they hit them. People do not want police coming in unmarked cars, unannounced, rolling down the street, opening up fire on citizens, and then playing the poor, poor boo-boo kitty victim. We don't want racist cops, which seems to be a huge freaking problem in that Minneapolis police department. Big old racist cops. And many other things. Sexist, misogynistic cops. Many other things going on. And the reality is that unless people take it seriously and try to fix these problems, they're not going to get fixed. I mean, it's clear the police union in Minneapolis does not want to solve any of the problems that they've got, that they like how the system works right now, and they are not willing to change it. Well, we're just asking for more civilians to be shot. We're asking for more racist cops. We're asking for more and accountability. And it's not just me that's had it with these clowns. It's the Wright County Sheriff who has had it with these clowns. Not exactly the most liberal person you've ever heard. I'm just saying, it's just, you guys, they still have to solve that problem. And I don't see a lot of people talking about that, how they're going to solve that. And, you know, I'm kind of hoping, maybe I'm kind of hoping that the investigation by the feds leads to something. But right now, from my knowledge, police union doesn't have to change their contract if they don't want to. And they don't want to. Why would they? They don't have any freaking accountability. And even in cases like Stallings, it's a year and a half, and they finally, and everyone that is involved can either retire or run away or hide. Zero accountability. Frankly, if I was Stallings, I'd be suing the crap out of the police department. But you know what? The police department doesn't pay a damn thing. It's the city of Minneapolis that has to pay for them. Why would they change? I think maybe the question, maybe if you want to solve the problem that police officers have to carry liability insurance, holy God, would that clear up a lot of problems real quick? If you passed a law that said the police of Minneapolis have to have liability insurance, well, then all of a sudden, they don't have the cover that they've been having by basically being horrifically bad cops and having the city of Minneapolis pay for their bad behavior. And once again, it's not all police. The vast majority of police officers are good people. But Minneapolis police, they're rotten to the frickin' core. They really are. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Minneapolis State Patrol says all troopers will be outfitted with new body cameras by June 30th, 2022. The new camera program was funded by the state legislature and signed into law by Governor Walz early this year. State Patrol officials say 40 troopers will begin wearing the new cameras full-time next week. The cameras will be activated during any contact between troopers and the general public, according to the news release. About 645 troopers, in addition to the state capitol security officers and commercial vehicle inspectors, will eventually be outfitted with the body-worn cameras. The patrol says a new camera system will also be installed at every trooper's vehicle. Last year, troopers had 411,316 public interactions, including 325,505 traffic stops and more than 30,000 crashes, according to the release. I got to imagine the traffic stops are way up with the amount of people flying on the high roadways right now. I imagine State Patrol is getting busy out there. The chief of the Minnesota State Patrol, Colonel Matt Langer, plans to unveil the new body cameras and detail the plan to deploy them at a news conference on Thursday afternoon. We missed that. Oh, shoot. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Let's take a break. Come on back. We'll be joined by Sven Sundgaard, weatherman extraordinaire, when we do return. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. She walked like a woman, so sexy and free. Something. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Sven Sundgaard, kind enough to join us. Best weatherman in town, hands down. Forecastissold.com/weather. Forecastissold.com/weather. And we should mention, Sven, from the top right here, the last time we chatted, 2 weeks ago, you were working on getting the Patreon and everything set up. It's all set up and going right now, right?
Yeah. So if you go to forecastissold.com/weather, right there at the top of that page are links to subscribe either through Patreon or Facebook through my fan page. And you get exclusive content, including the winter forecast, which I will either drop tonight or tomorrow.
Okay.
Almost finished.
Oh, okay.
Almost ready.
You've been working on this for a while.
Yeah, well, for several weeks. I mean, a lot goes into when you're trying to forecast 3 months and not just completely guess. It's an educated guess, of course, but yeah, some people just kind of like, it's going to be cold. Well, why?
<That's>, you know? Well, that's or a real reach there whatever. For winter. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you, Farmers Almanac.
Exactly. So once again, I want you to go forecastissold.com/weather. There's ways for you to sign up, get the exclusive content with Sven. And of course the winter weather forecast coming out either later tonight or tomorrow.
It's only a few bucks a month, you know, come on.
I'm subscribed. I'm there,
no,
man.
No, I know you are.
Absolutely. I love it. It's everyone go subscribe. This is seriously the nice thing about it is, okay, I like you get the weather apps on your phone and stuff. This is like my local weather app, and I love that. I can't, because I mean, there's only so much those can do. This gives me all the local information. You want that with your weather. Sven has that. Once again, forecastissold.com/weather. You want to get signed up for that. All right, now.
And especially with all the snow coming up and stuff this winter, you're going to find that I dive in a lot more in depth. You'll see more of the models and what each one particularly means. So if you're, you know, love snow or hate snow or it affects you, it'll be very useful.
I've got I just bought a new snowblower. So,
thanks. You just jinxed it. Now it won't snow until February.
Well, this is why I brought it up. I want to fire it up and get it going here, but
do you want to wear it out?
I don't want to necessarily go to town. It's not looking for the Arctic, dunes of snow. We should mention before we get into the winter, we just got done with November and we got done with the meteorological autumn. And your last forecast, you mentioned that both of those were once again warmer than they have been.
Yeah. So, you know, November was 2 degrees above normal, or 2.1 degrees actually, which is not as big of an anomaly as some of our other months. So it was a mild month. But I think when we have months, you know, late fall or early winter, they can kind of evade our perception because temperatures are getting colder because it's getting darker. So we don't necessarily notice because obviously November is colder than October, which is colder than September. So when it's a couple degrees warmer than normal, I think it gets missed by a lot of people. But it was a mild month. And again, what's been bizarre this year is it's the consistent warmth. We didn't have a lot of crazy days. It wasn't in the 70s, for example, like it was for 5 different days last November. It was just that consistent warmth, which has been the very odd thing this year, where it's just consistently 5 degrees or so above the average highs. And of course, it was a very dry month. So that's the other thing. We continue the drought. Again, we don't necessarily perceive it because the sun angle is nil this time of year. So when you get 14 hundredths of an inch of rain, which we had our first night of winter, which is bizarre enough. It's still muddy out there because just nothing's evaporating. It's the relative humidity is high. The sun doesn't do like it does in June or July. So we may not notice, but when you look at the fall, actually, fall was drier than the summer when you look relative to normal precipitation amounts. Yeah. August saved us. I mean, July, we saw 21% of our average precipitation. So it was very dry. But then August, everyone remembers, we got a lot of rain in a couple of weeks, and then it just stopped again. So overall fall, we saw just a little more than half of our normal precipitation. And that's not good for trees and everything else that were already stressed because of the summer drought. To go into winter with a dry ground is bad news. But, yeah, it was the fourth warmest autumn on record.
Wow.
When you combine the fact that September, October, and November were all mild. October being the biggest difference from normal, but when you combine the three of them, and, you know, speaking of, you know, my subscriber stuff, I dive into a little bit more detail about, you know, what are the top 10 warmest autumns mean for winter? There's more of a correlation with fall than there is summer temperatures, for example. So that's one of those little things that I just throw out there that you aren't going to get on my normal post.
Well, and I should mention too, on the normal post, you did mention December. Of all the months, I believe you said September, December are the two fastest warming months, and I think December is December the fastest.
Yeah, in our recent 30-year normals, you know, so we were using the 1981 to 2010, and we just now are shifting to the 1991 to 2020 normals. Those are 2 months that had the biggest shift. And December by a lot. Yeah, the December that we're using now is 2 degrees warmer than the previous one, which is huge when you factor in that we're just changing one decade. We got rid of the 80s and added the 2010s. And that seems to be in line with, you know, I think a lot of people have perceived that it seems like winter is getting a later start, that Decembers are milder, and that many years were like, God, are we going to have a white Christmas? Are we going to have a white Christmas? When's it going to get cold? That's not just in our head. That is actually being shown in the data. And then that summer is lingering. So Septembers tend to be warm. And we've talked about a few times, 2 months only are colder than the previous 30 years. And that was February and April, which seems to line up with some years, not every year, but more often than it used to be, winter kind of lingers. And that's when we have these polar vortex disruptions like we had this last February. It's interesting that even in the 30-year normals, we can see some of these interesting climate signals in specific months. But, yeah, December is statistically becoming a much warmer month than it used to be.
You know, one of the things I like about your weather is, as well, that you're very clear that, you know, it's an imperfect science. You can only predict what you can predict, and you have to actually have it happen before it comes to fruition. And we talked back in September. We were wondering if we were going to get one of those big globules of cold that just shot down, and would this be the year we got hit with another one of those? And that was kind of speculation. We didn't quite know where things are going. But I've noticed on a lot of the weather maps that you're putting out, it seems like that globule of cold that comes from that Arctic area, it seems to have shifted eastward, and it seems like it's getting more Michigan over in that area. Am I crazy, or does it seem like that right now is where the target zone is for all these colder temperatures that are plunging down from the north?
Yeah, the recent upper-level pattern has been basically – not the full west, but like Alaska and the very western coast has been cooler and wetter than normal. And now we're seeing this, that naturally pushes warmth up out ahead of it, which we have been a beneficiary of the last couple of weeks. And then, you know, just imagine it's like a seesaw pattern. So if air is surging north in the Rockies and in the Midwest, then air is surging south on either side of that ridge. And so you get kind of these every other ridge trough, which is warm, cold pattern that is kind of rippling right into Europe too. And we've had an unusual, on the other side of that, an unusual blocking pattern that is showing up occasionally into Greenland, some very warm air. And we watch those for a couple of reasons. One is it can kind of clog up the patterns and, you know, keep us mild like we've been. But also, now that we're heading into winter, we look for some of these to potentially disturb the polar vortex. And it might seem counterintuitive, but you want a strong polar vortex because that means it's spinning and the coldest air stays kind of bottled up close to the pole, stays in the Arctic. And when it's weak, it's easy to take a punch or two at it, which is, you know, some of this warm air surging from Greenland or Siberia or wherever it may be. And it can only take so many of those punches and it gets broken apart or wobbles off of the pole. And we saw that last year, shortly after New Year's.
Yeah.
It got really cold in Russia and Europe. And we're all kind of laughing. Oh, ha, ha, ha. We had a very warm January. And then it was our turn. So that's one of those. You don't want to see these unusual ridges of warmth far north, because that could spell doom for the polar vortex and us later in the winter. So we'll have to see. It's too soon to tell. Right now we have a good, strong polar vortex. So that's good news, but also pretty typical early in the winter. It's totally dark in the Arctic. It's getting colder and colder all the time. No sign of light there for a while. But, you know, as these patterns, if they get too clogged up, that can be a factor.
I know we've been dry here, and we've, of course, heard about California. I saw some photos. Montana looks like they're having all sorts of fits with wildfires right now. And this doesn't seem like the wildfire season for Montana.
Yeah, it's not. But that's kind of the thing that we're seeing is extensions of wildfire seasons. And, you know, if you don't have the precipitation, and if you're not cooling off to the point that you should, you know, not only have we been warm, but Colorado, Montana has been even warmer compared to normal than we have this last month of November. So we've been a beneficiary of that, as I just mentioned, but overall it's been kind of locked there. That's been the core of the warmth. And then we've been getting it occasionally. So that's why we haven't been as crazy warm when you look at compared to normal in November, as we were in October, but it is there. And when it's warm this time of year, it usually means it's dry. And it was already dry. The whole West is in a multi-year drought. So while we think our one-year drought is bad, imagine multiple years. And then you have, forests and old-growth forests and all sorts of other factors at play there. And obviously places that are harder to reach, too, to fight fires.
If you look at your weather forecast that you do put up there on the YouTube, there looks like a chance of some snow coming through, at least two shots of snow over the next 7 days starting this weekend. Although you did say the last weather forecast yesterday, it was starting to track more north. Is that still the case at this point?
Yeah, it's kind of wobbling. The general trend for the Sunday system is probably just to our north. I still think we might squeeze out a little bit, especially if the timing changes. A couple of the models are starting to shift the timing so that it might be maybe earlier in the morning Sunday or maybe even Sunday night on the other side of things. And we're in that time of year where, you know, if you can get it during the night when we're in a warm pattern, because we're going to be close to 40 still Sunday, then you have better odds of it being snow than rain or snow, and better chances of getting it to stick. But the Sunday system for us in southern Minnesota isn't so much of an exciting thing yet. But what it is a sign of is, regardless of if we get all of these systems that are kind of lining up, the pattern is getting more active heading into next week. So that's encouraging, because we've been in this drought pattern. So just to get storms in our direction is a big deal. Of course, the other component of that is we need it to be cold enough for it to be in the form of snow. And that looks to be lining up, too. We got a pretty potent chunk. So the polar vortex, as I mentioned, is strong, but it's taken a punch, and that's going to kind of dislodge a little bit of peripheral cold that'll be coming down towards us Monday, Tuesday. Tuesday looks like we may barely hit 20 degrees. So, you know, that's not bizarre for December, but for this year so far, that would be our coldest temperatures yet. Maybe even some single-digit morning lows in the suburbs. So we're going to have, it looks like, the cold in place. And so to answer your question, it looks like maybe not one or two, but maybe there are three possible systems within the next 7-8 days that could be lined up towards our region. Now, again, do we get directly hit by all three? Unlikely, but at least the pattern's more active. So some encouraging news. If, you know, I know people are already starting to hear, I hear the rumbles of, oh, are we going to have a white Christmas? You know, it's still 3 weeks away. But that would be some encouraging news. And once you get snow on the ground, it's a lot easier to keep things cool than when you don't.
when you look at these storms, now, first of all, this one that it was tracking north, that might get us a little bit more here. How much snow are we looking at possibly with each of these storms?
So the Sunday system for northern Minnesota, it does have the potential to drop half foot in some spots. I think generally it'll be a wide swath of 2 to 4, maybe a few 5-inch amounts, but there are going to be some spots that do see a half foot of snow. And in northeastern Minnesota, they have snow on the ground already, too. So it is really starting to look like winter up there, finally, which up there it should. It is solidly winter normally at this point of the year for that part of the state. And then the two systems next week have real potential too. I'd say in that range too. Direct hits could be half foot amounts. So that's again, encouraging.
Okay.
So these are not clipper systems. These are legit systems that'll be affecting us, each of the three. But again, where do they exactly line up? And they're not going to all follow the same track either.
But it does sound like you feel, and we're going to understand, we're forecasting here. But the likelihood of one of these is probably going to come through the metro.
Yeah, I think a week from now we're going to be looking at white ground.
Okay.
I think the odds are, at least one of those hits us. And then, again, can we keep it cold enough? But the models really are all over the place right now. It's just, I don't normally throw out wild numbers, but, for example, the European model gives us a total snowfall for the next 7 to 10 days of 2 inches.
Okay.
Canadian, again, don't count on that. I'm just giving you the crazy range that we're seeing right now. The Canadian model in the next 7 to 10 days gives us a total of 18 inches of snow. So that's what we're working with right now, and every second you go further out is less and less accurate, more and more variable. We're just in that time of year, it's the start of the winter season, and things can go really in any direction. It is a fascinating time of year because it is solidly a winter month. But like, for example, yesterday, the 1st of December, the record high is 68 degrees set back in 1998. So it can still get very warm. But as we know, it can be very cold. Easily we can have sub-zero temperatures at this point in the season. And so storm tracks literally can be anything and everything in between. So it's an exciting time of year. The dead of winter actually gets kind of boring around here.
Well, it does. It's more just looking at the pretty snow at that point from inside.
Icy snow.
And you already, in one of your forecasts, you were saying it was looking like we might warm back up into the 40s again. Is that still a possibility later next week?
Yeah, that's looking more towards the middle of the month. So we're looking more at the week after next. So that's getting into the long range, but it's entirely dependent on, do we get these snowfalls? If the European model is right and we get the lower end, or we just get grazed by these three systems and a lot of that can melt off, or even half of it, then it's going to be a lot easier to warm up. And if this pattern that we've been in just persists, even if we do get snow, does this warmth push in again? That could be a big problem. So, the American model, for example, I showed yesterday, had us almost close to 50 degrees again in the middle of the month. So that is not good if you want a white Christmas.
All right. So basically you're telling me I need to get my Christmas lights out of my house this weekend.
Basically.
Saturday.
It'll be a good week. Yeah, because we've got another day in the 40s yet tomorrow. And it will be above freezing both Saturday and Sunday for highs. So, you're procrastinating on that front. Better do it now.
All right. So, and for everyone else, obviously we got a little variance here. We'll find out more about Sunday. Obviously, I'll post Sven's weather forecast from YouTube. But once again, I want to encourage you, go to forecastissold.com/weather and sign up for the Patreon. You can sign up on Facebook, subscribe. You'll get the full weather forecast. You get the full weather, the winter weather breakdown as well coming down in the next 24 hours or so. I highly recommend it. It's great information for you. Forecastissold.com/weather. Make sure you sign up or go to Patreon and search for Sven there and you'll find him and get signed up on that one. Sven, thank you very much. I appreciate it, my friend.
You bet. Have a good weekend.
Take care. Sven Sundgaard, kind enough to stop on by and give us the latest breakdown on all this weather coming through. Sounds like I might try out get the snowblower out this next week. Yay. We'll find out. Let's see if Matt has all of his limbs when he returns mid-month. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. I will never forget being up on the Iron Range when my dad was still living up there. And so this was probably maybe 8 years ago, 9 years ago. It was December. And what we do is because, you know, we wanted to have make sure we had Christmas at home and we, for the kids. And we did this. So we went and visited Grandma and Grandpa, and we take them up there a little bit earlier. And we were there, and I think it was December 16th. And my dad was looking outside. Now, this is Bawabic. This is up by Gilbert, up in northern Minnesota, up on the ranch. And my dad was looking around, and there was grass. You could still see grass. Not because it hadn't snowed. It had snowed, but then it had warmed up enough to where it was melting out the snow. And as a matter of fact, it was – most of the time we were there, it was like 35 and foggy because you had all the snow on the ground that was melting. And so it basically made a big fog everywhere. It was hazy all the time. And my dad just looked out there. And now this is a man who was born on the Iron Range and spent most of his life up on the Iron Range. And he looked around and goes – we have broken this climate, and we have broken it. And you know, he's right. It's we just don't have normal winters like we used to. We should have had. I was kind of surprised. It's like I kept saying to myself, "Oh, I mean, are we really that much down on snow?" Yeah, we actually are. We should have had like 6 inches of snow by now, 8 inches of snow by now. We should have had some. We usually had a pretty much a guaranteed snowstorm at some point in October. You know, it was a fairly regular occurrence to have. I shouldn't say guaranteed, but a fairly regular occurrence. I think Sven said it 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago. You know, like one out of every two or every three Octobers, there's a snowstorm there with measurable snow. You know, and here we are, and we're just. It's changing, and we see it changing, and we're still doing nothing to stop it. You know, if we actually had people that weren't so concerned about other people's money as opposed to the betterment of our people, then maybe, just maybe we'd, I don't know, stop things like Line 3 and say, okay, we need immediate investment in solar, and we need immediate investment in wind. And, you know, realize that these are not, you know, as much as people want to say they're massive sacrifices, they're not really that big of sacrifices. I mean, my goodness, what I saw was in Europe was the electric freight train. They made a freaking electric freight train. And I was like, okay, that's pretty slick. Yeah, it's pretty good. I'm going to imagine it's it runs on C batteries or D batteries. I mean, it's like, it's like people tell you about battery power. It's like, trust me, it's the time of the year where I used to go through and with our kids and the holidays and all the toys and the games and the holiday decorations, I would go through packs and packs and packs of batteries. I'm okay with battery power. It works. It works. It's, you know, it's hard because, like I said, once again, here we are. Another, with the ninth month in a row, November, warmer than normal. December. Well, it's already been pretty warm. It's the 40s. So go Sven SunGard once again. It's forecastisoul.com. Forecastisoul.com/weather. And you sign up for his Patreon. Very good stuff there. We are going to be back tomorrow. Have a fantastic rest of your Thursday. And until tomorrow, see ya.